The Reserve Pool, Episode 32, Sidekicked to the Curb. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode of The Reserve Pool. We haven't said it in a while, but this is a podcast about Dice Masters and all of the people who love to play it. This is our first episode that we're recording in the new year, so let me say Happy New Year to everybody.
Yes, everyone, to all, a Happy New Year.
Absolutely, and I am, obviously, Dave.
And I'm still Evan, somehow. I'm really glad it's the second, because there could be time, there could be like time shenanigans, and, you know, to some people, and also we're not releasing this instantly, because in theory, if it was yesterday we were recording this, there could be someone who's like on the wrong side of the dateline or something. And
that's true.
And then there'd be an episode if like it magically got processed immediately. There'd be an episode that came out before the new year, and they're like, Happy New Year, everyone! And they're like, it's not the new year, and then we look silly.
Absolutely. No, it's a good thing. The international dateline is, it exists, and that's just that. But yes, we are here. It is January 2nd that we're recording this, though this will be out several days after January 2nd. And we made it. We're in 2015. That's pretty cool. We have a few more months before we celebrate a year for the Reserve Pool, but we made it through the turn of the calendar, so that's pretty cool, too.
Right. Yeah. No, it's always good to celebrate milestones.
Absolutely. However small. Yeah, episode 32. It's a nice round number. But that said, the calendar did turn over, and we talk a lot. Obviously, we're interested in a lot of gaming here, not just Dice Masters, though Dice Masters is fun. Play it.
Yes.
It's a good time to look back, as a lot of others are, and say, what was good about 2014 in gaming? I would say that a lot was good in 2014. I think we saw some fantastic games. I don't think there was one that definitely stood out head and shoulders above the rest. I just think there were a lot of really good games. And it's so hard for a standout game to happen right now, because design is just through the roof. There are so many companies doing so many different innovative things that, where do you even begin? What stood out for you this year? What's your like tops of 2014?
I mean there was this silly little game, no one's heard of it, Marvel Dice Masters, that I enjoyed a lot. I know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But obviously Marvel Dice Masters was a big one. I mean, I've enjoyed it a lot, even if I haven't gotten to play it as much as I'd like, especially recently. Right. But no, I mean, I wouldn't be making this. I wouldn't be on this podcast if I didn't like it. So
that's a good point. And I loved it too. Obviously, we're here. Yeah. You know, it's so fun. It's so big. So many people have bought in and everything like that. It's still not, you know, maybe as completely supported as we'd like, but it's there. And this newest set, especially, is just huge. It's so good. I do have to say that the Dice Towers Year End podcast, a few of their contributors over there were a little bit harsh on WizKids and Dice Masters, as if WizKids was the only company that had any sort of supply or production issue in 2014. They weren't, if you didn't know.
Oh, man, I could tell you stories about how long it took me to get a copy of Betrayal on the House of the Hill.
There you go. I mean, there are production issues in China. There are customs issues here all the time. Those things are, like, constant. And then there was a shipping strike. I mean, and then there was just ridiculous demand that nobody could have predicted. Everybody wants their game to sell in the tens of thousands, but so few games do. And the production cycle for these games is so darned long that you can't just say, oops, it's more popular, let's get a whole bunch more of these. It's not feasible. It's not possible. There's no way they could have predicted it, because all the hype happened after the first production run was started. And to be fair, Tom Vassell did kind of say, you know, stick up for that. You know, the fact that there's no way that they could have predicted it, one. Two, and they were far from the only company. It's just, it's more fun to pick on WizKids. WizKids has a mixed reputation with some HeroClix things and other stuff, and in many cases it's deserved, but I don't think here. But off of my soapbox, yes, Dice Masters was great. What else?
I had a ton of fun playing Steam Park a few times over the year. I mean, that was a good one. Cutthroat Caverns, which actually isn't... I actually don't think is a game released in 2014, but I think the expansion... Some of the expansions may have been. Regardless, I played it a bunch this year. I really enjoyed it. Also, though it's not quite a board game...
it's a tabletop game.
Yeah. I was going to say 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons. I've been poking and prodding at that, and I'm really down on 4th edition. I'm not, actually. I know many people are. I can see the good points in it. All of the D&Ds are special children, and they are all deserving of our love, in my opinion. Yeah, 5th edition, I'm really looking forward to getting mucked in with that again. So,
yeah, it's really cool. I've had a chance to digest some of the books, and I'm sold. And I did do
literally?
Some of the
playtests, I mean,
yes, they were tasty.
They're huge, though. I mean...
You cut them up. Yeah, my wife actually just made pierogies this evening, and they were fantastic.
And you
but,
can
we used the D&D book. Yeah, we chopped them up.
Literally put anything in pierogies and it will taste wonderful. So.
Actually, she did potato, bacon, and Gouda. Smoked Gouda.
Oh,
my gosh. And the dough is as easy as sour cream and flour.
Yeah.
With a touch of something. I mean, anyway, this is not a cooking show. It's a gaming show.
I've been thinking about that, but no.
I got to say, Steam Park, that's a fun game. And if you like dice, get Steam Park. It's a fun game that involves a lot of dice, but then action selection and different things like that,
and
a little
build
bit of engine
a
building.
Steam park.
It looks if you
a
like
a theme park. You build a steam park, but it's a theme park.
Yes,
there's a lot of really nice like little visual stuff. You have like the rides are all 3D.
They look
just
so
like
cool.
Tokens. Yeah.
Yes, they really. I mean. Looking at that game on the table, you feel like you accomplished something when you're playing. Yeah, I'm with you. Also, Five Tribes is another great one. Days of Wonder knocked it out of the park again. That's fantastic. Pretty unique, too, because it's not worker placement. It's worker displacement. Almost a Mancala-like mechanic. But if you hate Mancala, don't worry. I do, too. This is awesome. And, of course, Splendor, which should have won the Spiel des Jahres. But lost to a game called Camel Up. I know you like Camel Up, some people out there. I know you do, but I had a chance to play it. I had a chance to watch a lot of videos, and I just see a lot of the criticisms that people levy about the game, some of the runaway issues and other things like that. It's true. And that little popper thing doesn't work perfectly. It's a neat concept, but it gets stuck. Kind of like cube towers get stuck sometimes.
Wait, so. Like a popper like in Boggle? Or not Boggle, Sorry?
No, it has this weird like pyramid thing that like it pops out a... It's you have to see it. But yeah, it's not so much the Camel Up is stupid. It's just really actually that I really like Splendor and it should have won SDJ and it didn't. I disagree.
Yes, well, I've clearly never played Camel Up. I have played Splendor, and I can vouch that it is quite a bit of fun.
The thing with Splendor is that if you look at a set of people playing it, you're not going to be like, oh, they're having so much fun outwardly. But inside, internally, you're just thinking, oh, man, I could do this, but then I could do that. Ooh, but I could try this instead. And
oh, but
like,
what if he takes
little,
this card?
Yeah, all the little combinations that's running through your head, and I find that to be a lot of fun. It's been a hit with everybody we've introduced it to. It's my new go-to gateway game. That's how much I believe in Splendor. I think it's fantastic. And you can get it. Often it's $30. I've seen it as cheap as $20.
Yeah, just a few days ago.
Yeah, there you go.
And those chips they give you in that, you could do some damage with those. Those are pretty solid.
You know, the weird thing about that is the box insert's fantastic. Everything gets held fine.
Right.
But I store a lot of my games on their sides on my game shelf. And somehow, they get I store them by color. It's all sorted. They get completely mixed up to where I'll open the box and every chip is in a slot, but they're completely mixed. I don't know what happens. I think I have a poltergeist.
Maybe you have several poltergeists, and we can tell that Splendor is a really good game
because
while
it.
You're asleep, they're playing it. They're playing it at night.
I think that's it. Yeah, so that's 2014, a quick look for the two of us. And in the next episode, we're going to glance at a few things we're pretty excited about for 2015, because I think 2015 is going to be a very exciting year in gaming as well. But that's where we are right now.
No, I mean, it's been a good year. I guess really at the beginning of the year, I started getting back into board gaming after a somewhat lengthy vacation, and I've been having a great time.
Yeah, that's true,
too. I don't know why I left.
Well, and of course, World of Warcraft has taken up some time, and but we won't get on
World
about that.
World of Garrison Craft.
Well, yes and no, but we can talk about the merits of that one other time. Let's move on and answer one quick little reader mail. Right, please get in touch with us, mailbag@thereservepool.com. Evan, you are our rules guy, so this is perfect for me to read and you to answer. But yes, no, this is a good one. I think we'll nail it here. But it's a good question from Harold. And Harold says, "Hi, please help me in clarifying what would be the ruling for this case. Falcon Recon, which is the one that makes sidekicks unblockable, and two other sidekicks are attacking. I use Distraction Global to remove Falcon from the attack zone. Are the sidekicks blockable?" Now he says, "I have read that the sidekicks are not blockable because globals can only be used after attackers and blockers are declared, but I would like to have a more official ruling." Well, first let me say we're not like official, but we do obviously get a lot of these kind of questions, and we do look at the rules pretty heavily just because we do. So thank you for the you're almost like overestimating us, and that's a lot of pressure, man. That's a lot of pressure, but really, we are flattered. Secondly,
indeed.
Go on, Evan.
Okay, I'm just quickly looking up the exact text for Recon, so I can see, but so I can make sure I have this right.
I want to say he's a when attacks character. Is that not correct?
Yeah. Well. If I can find an F. Okay, yes. So, Falcon Recon's text is, "When Falcon attacks, your sidekick can't be blocked." So, yes. If Falcon attacks, then even if he was distracted away, he still attacked, so sidekicks can't be blocked.
Yeah, it is pretty cut and dry with that. And that's just a good reminder to really examine closely how the attack step works. We declare attackers, and then abilities that happen from people being attackers are triggered. Then we declare, which would be Falcons in this case.
Yeah, they remain until the end of the turn.
Exactly. So if it's a when attacking or when blocking trigger, that remains that way even if the character, through some sleight of hand, is no longer attacking or blocking. So
we're
yes,
on the table.
Absolutely. So... it's a good question, Harold, but that's what it is, and that's where some of the minutiae of the attack step comes into play. So, yeah, that would stay in effect.
Well, it's also sometimes some of the minutiae of how they phrase things on the cards.
Yes.
I could see a slightly different phrasing leading a player to say, no, that's not the case. You know, if Falcon is attacking, your sidekicks can't be blocked. If they worded it like that, then it's a little less clear because, well, now he's not attacking, so your sidekick can't. So maybe your sidekicks can be blocked. But right. I think when it says when he attacks, your sidekick can't be blocked. He did attack. He's just they don't care if he's attacking now.
Right.
Just
yeah.
As long as he attacked at some point this turn.
And I have to say too, Harold, you have an awesome picture of Galactus. I think it's Galactus. It's kind of small as your avatar there. If I'm wrong, email me and tell me that I'm wrong. But that is a really really cool picture. Of your avatar in Gmail there. So my props to that. But good question. Thank you so much for writing in. And you can too, mailbag@thereservepool.com. The cool thing about this question is that the thing we talk about next might have a little bit to do with Recon. Let's see.
Maybe. He might show up.
He might.
You can scout out that possibility.
We sure can. Let's find out. We'll be right back. Hey everybody, Dave here from the editing room, and I just wanted to clarify that the Flying Sidekick deck we're about to talk about consists of the Angel from Uncanny X-Men that buffs sidekicks, as well as Green Goblin Goblin Lord, which does the same, combined with Falcon Recon, who makes sidekicks unblockable, as well as the Professor X Global. I don't believe we explicitly state what we're talking about here at any point in time, and I wanted to take the opportunity to do that now, so we didn't just sort of, you know, throw you into the fire and people were like, wait, what are they talking about? That's what we're talking about. That's the deck at hand. It's powerful, it's interesting, and it's fun and deadly. So, on to the feature.
One of the things we've been noticing recently, there's been a lot of talk about this Flying Sidekick deck, which
I believe the folks who named it were the guys, and maybe gals, I don't know, but the folks over at
Dice Master's Rule, though, yeah. From reading their article on it, it was originally pointed out by someone named Pistolfish, or who goes by Pistolfish on the merry interwebs. But which it's relatively simple in concept. You have a bunch of guys who buff sidekicks, and then you beat your opponent to death with sidekicks. And, you know, it's a pure, a full constructed deck, and full in the sense of it's not just UXM or Avengers versus X-Men. It's both of, it's draws on cards from both of them. But we actually gave it a try earlier today, and I will say it lost, but we'll talk about that a bit more later. But I still think
it wasn't that deck's fault.
Yeah, it wasn't the deck's fault. It wasn't even your fault. Yeah. No, it was luck's fault.
Yes.
Ooh, luck.
In a dice game? What?
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. But yeah, no, it's definite. I mean, even from a losing game, I mean, it lost in the fifth turn and it was really close.
Yes.
Or the fourth turn and it was it was clear I would have probably won next turn. So
yeah, you absolutely would have. And in fact, we did one more roll just to see what you would have gotten. I mean, chaos theory being what it is, who really can say? But right. And yes, you would have destroyed me. I mean, I would have been negative a gazillion.
I think negative four or something.
A gazillion. It might as well have been a gazillion. Negative one is enough.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, before we get into this then, let's talk a little bit about the role of sidekicks before this latest set. You know, just in Avengers versus X-Men, we had a couple of main sidekick buffers, which were Green Goblin, Goblin Lord, and Captain America, Natural Leader.
Right. And one of the things why I think people may not have been quite as big on them was, well, firstly, you had the whole thing with, you know, Sarina and Gabi and other characters who were just like, hi, we run in and beat you to death in like three turns, and Goblin Lord is maybe a little slow, and Natural Leader is a four, so he's also a little slow, and then it's a little hard to get sidekicks out sometimes. So, you know, it seems like it's easier to just go with that Gabi route. Also, you had cards like Dr. Doom, Reed Richards' rival, who'd be like, well, -1/-1, if you don't have one of your buffer guys up, then all your sidekicks go away. So
yes.
There were a few things that sort of kept them down. Also, the Angelo Fortunato Venom between the two of them, that's -3/-3, and not even Cap and Goblin Lord will save them then.
Right, but the characters, you know, Goblin Lord was 4, and I believe Natural Leader was a 5, if
Goblin
I'm not mistaken.
Lord is Goblin Lord's a 3.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's nice and cheap.
You would have just played with him, so you would know. yeah, Goblin Lord is a 3, you're right, and I guess Captain is a 4 or a 5.
Yeah, he's a 4.
Okay.
I thought he was a 5 at first, because I remember, like, Cap's always overpriced, and that makes me sad. But, no, he's a 4, which is, you know, turn winnable. So.
The thing holding them back there, I guess, was the fact that you had very quick, powerful characters that really just wanted to block, like Beast, for example. And I suppose if you're pushing out Beast really quick and doing stuff with Beast, that maybe wouldn't make the sidekicks quite as effective. And I suppose if we're playing cross-set, as we did just a little bit ago, the Beast could have been a thing, but I didn't really bring him. I wanted to try something, you know, something else. But, yeah, it wasn't completely viable, but in this set, it gets the psychics get a whole lot more toys that make them interesting.
Right. I mean, here, the main crux of the deck is you're going to use Goblin Lord and Angel Inspiring, who gives +1 attack and defense to sidekicks when he attacks. But they're both 3 costs. They're both really easy to get out. You can get very easily a turn 2 wave of sidekicks with these two guys. You go in, you do a big, nice big hit on turn 3, or if you get really unlucky with rolls 4. And then you sort of bleed them to death with stuff like Human Torch, Flame On, Power Bolt, whatever else you need. Falcon, mm-hmm. Recon, making your sidekicks unblockable. Just other whatever you can do to sort of just eke out some more damage as your opponent ramps up. And hopefully you can get that the second half of their health or whatever is left after the first turn, after your first big punch, gone before they can come back.
That was the problem in the game that we played, but again, it was only barely a problem. Basically, if you're in your first 2 turns, you can get Goblin Lord and Angel out there, Angel Inspiring out there, and you do the Professor X thing a couple of times. I mean, the ramp that you get from that is impressive, because after the first turn, you can buy those, you can buy one of those, and then you do the Professor X thing at your opponent's turn. And then the next turn, you can buy another one of those, and you should be able to do the Professor X thing twice.
And you may even want to do it 3 times.
You may even be able to do it more, yes. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you're rolling a ton of sidekicks and very likely one or both of Angel and Goblin Lord, and now you have 2-2 or 3-3 sidekicks ready to just, ram your opponent in the jugular.
I mean, this really gets triple work out of the global, because not only are you keeping your characters cycling through and you're keeping your sidekicks out of your deck, so you're making sure you have energy, but you're also making sure you have sidekicks, which are the main crux of the deck. So it's it really does, that global does all your work.
It's crazy.
It's really, really powerful for this. And I think that more so than, Angel and Falcon and some of the other elements, while they definitely are important for the deck, I really feel it's the Professor X global that's allowing this to be just so vicious so quickly.
Yeah, because it's not just speeding you up and being able to buy things. It's speeding you up and giving you the things that you need to have. And that's the crazy thing. But that's an excellent point by you. Boy, it's a rough deck to play against. But let's look at some of the other forms that it could take. Because we did play it right with Goblin Lord and some of the basic actions going across set, some of the characters going cross set. You really could do an effective version of this just in Uncanny X-Men, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to have quite the speed. You're not going to have Goblin Lord, so you're not going to have that. You guys won't be 3-3 turn 3. It's just not going to happen easily. I think there may be... I know there's Trainer, which they actually... Professor X Trainer, which they also suggest you have, but he's 5 cost and... Excuse me. As he is 5 cost and... That's going to tie up a little too many of your guys to really get the wheels rolling early on. You're probably not going to want to get him out for turn 3.
But it's an option. A little, yeah, you still probably could within the first, but in the early part of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might want to do that. It'd probably slow down your first punch to turn 4, maybe 5, but... it's certainly an option. There's a lot of things a lot of cards here that do something with sidekicks, though in many cases it's knock out sidekicks, which you maybe don't want to be running.
I can't argue with any of that. There are a lot of options, but a couple of the sidekick options do go away. But even so, when you have stuff like, again, Angel, Falcon, the Professor X that we already talked about, Trainer, buffing sidekicks, making sidekicks unblockable, doing all kinds of shenanigans with your sidekicks, plus you have a global that just keeps feeding you sidekicks, it can be pretty brutal, even if you don't have Goblin Lord. Because, in the game that we played, you did 10 damage to me in turn 3?
Yes. With Goblin Lord repeated... I rolled him twice, and he came up energy both times.
Yes.
So.
You did that much damage to me in turn 3, and you only were able to use Angel. So, I mean, another one like that, and it would have been bad. I mean, there were I was in dire straits there.
Yeah. I mean, you also lose Power Bolt if you're going to say you can't take... Like, I'm always a little fuzzy on that, because I could see them saying, no, you can't have Uncanny... or you can't take any Avengers versus X-Men characters, but basic actions seem like they should maybe be available cross-set.
I'm not sure, and I'm
curious. And I'm not sure if they're gonna how that's gonna work. But if you're being super strict and saying no, it has to be from UXM, like no exceptions, not even for basic action, then you lose Power Bolt. And I honestly feel that Power Bolt is really nice to the deck because it's damage that someone can't do anything about.
Right. Well, let's narrow the focus a little further then still, right? So we start with using full constructed everything. Now we're talking about full constructed but just UXM. Let's talk about hybrid constructed, which, again, in a WizKids event would likely just be UXM. I think that this could absolutely work just fine in that environment as long as you have Angel, Professor X, Falcon, and I don't know, who would your fourth one be? I think that's the core. Even those three are the core right there. I mean,
Namor has been suggested.
Yes.
By the guys over at Dice Masters Rules. I could see why there are a few basic actions that would be bad times for this deck. Imprison, obviously, not a fun time. You can lock up your opponent's... You could just lock up your opponent's sidekicks for as long as you want. You just, you know, don't attack them for a while. Build up your mighty, crushing army of destruction. And, okay, I'm going to attack you now. And that's it for them.
Yeah, and I think that this deck... I mean, now we're getting into a counters a little bit now here. But I think that this deck is probably why Imprison is in the game. I mean...
Well, I think it's more than just this deck.
But
there's
this sort of
there's
thing.
A lot of... There's a, yes. It's a counter to the Weenie Rush, which this is a variant on.
It is. And, I wish there were a couple of more delay cards. I mean, Imprison is very necessary. And if you're doing full constructed or even semi-constructed, hybrid constructed, whatever you want to call it, you're going to want to maybe start thinking about packing Imprison if this deck sees a lot of play. Imprison could shut it down and give you the time to build up your characters. If I had really thought about what I was playing against when we played, which we will talk about this, I swear. We're not just like ramping up to nothing. But if I had thought about it a little more, I probably would have just bought that. But, you know, whatever. 2020 hindsight. We just wanted to play. It was fun.
Right.
But yeah, I think that hybrid constructed, the guts, it's an easy deck to condense into the guts that, it's an easy deck to condense just kind of down to its skeleton, and it would still be pretty effective because the big thing is feeding sidekicks and getting those buffers. And because Angel is so inexpensive, that's not going to be hard to do. And Falcon is not very expensive, so it's not going to be hard to do. Professor X, you can build up to it if you want him. Maybe Falcon rolls an extra energy when you get him up, and that's how you buy your Professor X. I don't know, but you do have a lot of options there, and that's really cool, too. It's a nasty deck. I mean, it will punch you in the face.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think without losing out on Goblin Lord means you're probably not going to be seeing much in the way of turn three kills. And, you know, it'll probably be like 5 or 6 or 7 or something, which, you know, I guess that's giving slightly slower decks a little more. Or, you know, I'm thinking about fighting with a Tsarina Rush or a Gobby deck, you know, maybe that's going to start to be a problem. But I think, you know, you're not going to see those in an Uncanny X-Men tournament.
Correct.
So also not to be worried about. Another possibility, I think, for your fourth, the super rare Scarlet Witch controls probability.
Yeah.
It's a little bit weird because it's kind of like, when do you buy this? At the same time... And I like we said, we promise we're going to talk about this, but spoilers ahead, I feel like a lot of why the deck, the flying sidekick deck didn't go quite as planned was on my last turn, I had an absolutely trash set of rolls.
You did.
Like, couldn't roll a single character sidekick.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, that extra reroll... That's the safety net.
Well, there's a couple things to that. The first thing is you would have had to buy her, which would have set
that's,
you back a turn.
That's exactly the problem. It's like, but when do you buy her?
And the second thing is she would have had to come up and you had to been able to field her.
Yeah.
Which is another thing. So I see what you're saying, but I don't know it actually would have helped you in that game.
It's like I want her, but I have no idea how I'd get her in such that she'd actually be useful.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the game. So we did a little roll, and Evan didn't have any dice handy, so we just rolled a character die, and we called out character or energy, and that worked well. So yeah. Evan went first, I believe, and
yes.
You bought some stuff, pretty much what you'd expect, right? I think either an angel or
angel
a goblin.
Angel, and kept a mask in reserve for the thing.
And I bought a mystique and did the thing as well. And then you pretty much did like the same thing, right? But with Goblin Lord that time.
I bought a Goblin Lord the first turn, an Angel the second turn. I did the thing, bought a.
You did
so
the
first
thing
turn was
times.
Goblin, save a mask. On Dave's turn, I did the thing, so I had 6 dice for my second turn. I then bought Angel and saved. I think I saved 3 mask energy.
I think it was two, but yeah.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about that was that
right,
now,
and I fielded a sidekick.
Yeah. And the cool thing about that was that now you had so few sidekicks that were going to be in your bag for the next refill that it was so much easier for you to get your 2 characters.
Right.
So your turn 3, you rolled, you got sidekicks and an angel. And we're able
sidekick,
to...
I got sidekick, angel, green goblin. Like, I drew sidekick, angel, green goblin, and sidekick.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's pretty much what you want. I mean, unluckily, green goblin refused to roll a character. So I only... but I did get 3 sidekicks that turn, which is not necessarily that strange, given how many rerolls you had, given that I had, like, you know, I was throwing out 6 sidekick dice.
Right.
Or whatever it was, a lot.
And then ultimately you punched me in the face for 10. So it's 20 to 10 at this point, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to survive another one of those. So I have Mystique out, and I get Pyro and Mr. Sinister, because I was trying the villain deck. I would have bought different things, or maybe even brought different things like Imprisoned, but again, hindsight. So what happened is that Evan rolled poorly, and I was able to get out Mystique, Mr. Sinister, and Pyro over the span of a turn or two. I had Mr. Sinister and Pyro that I had just rolled, and I was looking at it and trying to figure out what's the most damage I could do, because I realized with Power Bolt and some of the other buffs, I could almost do 20 damage. And then I did a really stupid thing, or a really smart thing. It's smart when it pays off.
We were talking about it because it's like, how much damage could you do? How much damage could you do? And I said, well, if you're trying to squeeze out a little extra damage, it's like, what level are your characters? You could try rolling them up.
Yes. So I looked and I realized that if I could roll Mr. Sinister to his 3rd level, and if I could change 2 sidekicks to question marks, shields, or bolts, I would be able to win. So I had a 50-50 shot with the sidekicks, and Mr. Sinister was a crapshoot. So I rolled, and I managed to get it. So what ended up happening is I have a level 3 Pyro, a level 3 Mr. Sinister. Mystique is now +2/+2 from those villains. And then between the sidekicks that I had, plus what I was able to either buff with Power Bolt, or excuse me,
Invulnerability's
global ability, which gives +1 attack if you spend a bolt, or by using Iron Man's ability to change people into villains, thus
specifically
pumping up
sidekicks to villains. Yeah,
to change sidekicks to villains, I was able to give Mystique another like point or two, and I did exactly 20 damage to Evan, and I won.
In one shot.
Yes. However, next turn Evan would have destroyed me. I mean, it was kind of a dumb move, but at the same time, there was pretty much nothing else at all I could have done.
When it is your only chance for victory, you have to go for it.
Yeah. I mean, if I could have just done 18 damage, I don't know if I would have done it, because I wanted to see if I could have blockers and maybe set that deck up to work the way it wants to, using Mr. Sinister, using Iron Man to pull villain shenanigans. But then Evan bought a Human Torch. If he gets that out, fuels all these sidekicks, makes unblockable sidekicks, pumps them with Angel, I was done. I was done. So
yeah, or even just the next turn, it was, you know, Angel and Green Goblin coming, plus a Power Bolt. If I got even vaguely good rolls with that, that's it.
Yes. So, I mean, the deck lost. It lost, you know, 10-0, but it was an incredibly close game. I mean, that score means absolutely nothing. It was an incredibly tight game that if Evan had rolled just a little better, you know, or if I hadn't gotten that, you know, coaxed that Mr. Sinister to go up to level 3, it wouldn't have happened. Now, on the one hand, that's pretty darn cool. This deck that I was using is certainly not designed to work that way, but it can work that way, obviously, if it happens. It's not supposed to punch you in the face in one turn, but apparently it can. These are two, I mean, pretty... On an island, they're two pretty strong decks, and it was a pretty close game against the two of them that came down a little bit to rolls. I mean, if you pilot decks skillfully and everything else like that, it's going to be the strategy... It's going to be executing the strategy well and also a little bit of the rolls that are going to do something in this game. It's a dice game after all. And that's why it's fun to be competitive, but you can't be too, like, hardcore serious with it. And that's cool. I like the fun of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, if someone's trying to find a way to win, even if it's against me, I'll sometimes, you know, I see no reason not to give them hints if, you know, it's not a super competitive setting because... Sometimes it's just fun to see if they get that level 3 guy.
Yeah, and that's... Oh, man. Sorry. Yeah, and that's exactly what you did. And I didn't even think about the fact that Mr. Sinister's not level 3. So if you hadn't said that, you kind of sealed your own fate there, my friend.
Yep.
But I'm so glad you did, because that was such a crazy moment. I mean, I rolled it, I looked at it, and then I just threw my head back and laughed. I mean, it was too ridiculously funny, because that stuff never happens to me in this game.
Sure. And it will never happen in now that it's happened, it will never happen in a competitive setting.
So. No, well, of course not. But
yeah.
You know, that's the stuff that stories in these games are made of, and that's
right.
Why I play. That's why I play any games. I mean, it's the stories that you create.
Yeah, I mean, I think though that, like, going through this, there are definitely counters to it. I mean, it's obviously it can't always win. People have mentioned Cable, Beast Genetic Expert, I'm pretty sure some of the, like, Psylocke would, one of the Psylocke's, I think it's her common form, would make for bad times for this deck.
It's but, true, yeah.
The other thing, I mean, it really is, it's really just leveraging the heck out of that Professor X Global, because it's getting it everything it needs. And I think that makes me think, you know, looking at the first set, what we were seeing was, oh man, these quick, fast characters are just so nasty. We really need, you know, we need counter. We'd like counters to them, but really, it's like we kind of want to see if we can get away from that a bit. And I'm wondering, it's like, does this mean, like, looking at what we're learning here, with, like, the Professor X Global being the thing that's really powering a lot of deck engines, it's like, well, is the next thing we need for Age of Ultron or something counters to globals, you know, locking down a global is sort of similar to how Loki Gemkeeper locks down a character.
I think
is,
so
that's something that we might want to say. And honestly, Age of Ultron with robots controlling everything, that sounds like the place you'd see it.
I think so. On Twitter a little while ago, myself, one of the guys from Dice Masters Rules, one of the guys from Dice Masters Anonymous, were kind of going back and forth in a conversation. And the one thing that we sort of came to a consensus on is that one thing that that this game does not have yet, Imprisoned is maybe a step towards it, I don't know, but there's no way to have kind of like that stall strategy. And you'll even see this in, like, the dual decks that come out in Magic the Gathering, where one deck is kind of a quick direct damage, do that kind of stuff. The other deck is going to be bigger creatures, but it gives you the means to sort of stall. You have things that will bounce creatures back to their opponent's hand. It'll have things that, you know, counter spells, different things like that, so that it gives you the opportunity to build up a little bit behind some walls, behind some of those things, and then... you know, execute your strategy there. This game doesn't have that so much. And it kind of forces you to then avoid an entire archetype, which, I mean, obviously they're only archetypes in certain games, but I think they're useful ones. And a lot of the archetypes, a lot of people gravitate towards them because it matches their personality in one way or another, or it's just their play style. Kind of like how in every RPG, like action RPG, I end up playing a hunter, ranger kind of person. It's just what I gravitate towards.
Yeah, I think really the gross point is that a lot of the other bits and pieces, sidekicks have counters. Now we're seeing with, you know, guys like Namor and a few others, action dice have counters. There's a lot of counters to characters, but there's nothing to stop globals. Aside from one Professor X from AVX, which is probably not the most interesting of the three Professor X's. So, and is something you can get around by paying some life.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that now in both sets to this point, two of the stronger archetypes are very, very much global fueled. Whether it was some of the control strategies in AVX or this sidekick strategy here. Now, I mean, that said, I think globals can help the counter to it. You know, we mentioned Imprisoned before, and one of the problems that I see that you listed in the notes is that the timing is hard with that sometimes. But at the same time, if you are, you also have access to the Professor X global, even if you didn't bring them. So if you're doing some of those things, that's going to make it a little easier for you to get Imprisoned out, and it could come at the right time. Now, that said, well, unless you also find a way to fill up your field to block things or so your opponent just doesn't attack, you know,
right,
those characters may not ever even be out there that long. So
yeah, I mean, my the reason I feel Imprisoned's hard to work with against the flying sidekicks is because most of the time the sidekicks will come out and then attack and go off the field.
Yeah.
So you have no chance to imprison them. They're only out for the turn they're doing stuff. So since you can't save your action dice to use on your opponent's turn like you can with spells and magic, then it's you only, you know, your opponent has to have a really poor turn where it's like, oh, and my angel and Green Goblin came up energy, so next turn we'll see them.
Right. Well,
and that makes it just kind of hard to run Imprisoned against it.
Yeah.
I do think Reed Richards' Rival still is something to take a bite out of the deck, though.
Yeah.
-1/-1, if they don't have their Green Goblin out, they're... sidekicks are falling over, and even if they're not, then well, they're doing less damage, so it's sort of an option, though I guess unless you're running a villain deck, which we all know my position on, then it might not be a good choice. But
that's,
if you are,
yeah, that's fair. Well, the homework here then is, I mean, Reed Richards' Rival maybe works, but again, it's a little pricey to get out. If you have the Professor X, maybe. But yeah, the homework for all of
it
us
also
really...
denies you the Dr. Doom Victor, which if you're running a villain deck is a really, really nasty, like, board clearing tool.
Right. But in any case, the homework for all of us, ourselves included, is to find ways, like, what's the real counter here? But not just that counters this, but also can win on its own. What's the other strategy here? And that's what I think we want to find. The villain deck is very strong, but it needs to have a very good way to stall. And to this point, I don't know that it has an effective means to do that. Whether you're talking cross-set, whether you're talking just kind of in block play within only UXM, or just within hybrid constructed. So share your ideas with us, and we'll certainly be looking to do the same sometime here in the future. Can't say when yet, but share your ideas with us, and not just characters, because obviously there are specific characters that can be counters for just about any strategy, but how do they fit, and when are you going to buy them, and how do they allow you to win with something else? Some of these characters may be useful against this deck, but you're not only going to see this deck, and that's where it is right now. But otherwise, this is a strong archetype. Play with it, have some fun with it, tinker with it, and see what you'll get to beat it.
Yeah, I mean, I seen one of the comments that was mentioned on the Dice Masters Rules article. They mentioned Toad and Venom. And, you know, that slots into a villain deck pretty well. actually, and I could see arguments for taking Toad and even Venom anyway. So, you know, that's maybe that's the strategy if you're playing a Venom deck, a villain deck. But, you know, what about for other players? And that, you know, what would fit in for them that won't necessarily mess up their deck? Or, you know,
so
what decks have some slots where it's like, well, what am I worried about?
Right. Well, let us know. Are you seeing this in your meta? How are you playing against it? Are you going to be the one to introduce it to your meta? What are they going to do against you? Myself, I'm pumped because this coming Sunday, I will be finally getting to an OP. I'll be getting to also meet Randy face-to-face because he's kind of volunteering to help host it and everything at his game store, and I'm really excited. We're going to be making a short trip over to Ohio. Not that far, just a couple hours, and it's worth it. We're going to make a day of it. It should be fun. We expect to have some video up for that, as well as to do some audio, so we may have a bonus episode or something. I'm not sure yet how I'll do it. I'm going to try and be creative, but who knows. But that's pretty much what we can say about Sidekicks at this point without tiring ourselves out over it. It's good. Play with it and help us find a way to beat it. Help us all. Help the Dice Masters world. We need you. Otherwise,
to fight forest fires. Yes. Also, help us with ideas.
Otherwise, please contribute for all the things we're looking for contributors for. That's mailbag@thereservepool.com. You know what that is. Follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and everything else. Otherwise, thanks for listening. I'm Dave.
And I'm Evan.
And this is The Reserve Pool.
Indeed. I have interesting vocal range. Katie the other day remarked, I was talking to her on FaceTime, like we were talking about something and Murlocs came up and I made the Murloc gurgle and she's like, that is...
I used to be able to do it. There it is.
And she's like, that is frighteningly accurate.
All right. So we clapped. Yes. Yes.
Okay. And I from what I hear, the outtake for this one is going to be us Murloc gurgling at each other.
It's possible. All right. And that was all pre-show, folks.
Yes. We haven't even started yet.
No.